Hi, welcome to episode 447 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm Dave Elliott, and much like the movie version of The Thing, I can't afford pants! Today, the 447th issue of the Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four Volume 3, Number 18, from June 1999. Bedlam Breakout by Chris Claremont and Salvador La Roca. So the story starts back in Shadow City, at the Bedlam Purgatorium, a repository for the most dangerous criminals in Shadow City. For some reason, it looks like one of the Jawas sandcrawlers from Star Wars. And there in the rain is the police van pulling up to the Purgatorium, which sounds more like a kind of place where they would keep anorexics instead of criminals. And out of the van comes the criminals captured last issue, the Fantastic Four, in their virtual reality cells, the Tetrad, and the group of ass-kicking female thieves, the Twisted Sisters. Nearby, the crime fighters Lockdown and his protege, Rosetta Stone, are keeping watch. So the Tetrad are let out, and they're shackled up and wrapped up in these special suits to keep them from using their powers. Their names in this reality are Grim Ben, Stormy Sue, Richard Reed, and Matchstick Johnny. Why not Stormy Johnny? I don't know why. He must be special. So we meet the chief superintendent of Bedlam Purgatorium, Dr. Edwina Dantes. Yes, another new female character. And she welcomes the Tetrad to the Purgatorium. She tells them to follow orders, or else. Lockdown says to her, "Reed's planning something. I can see it in his eyes. He's arrogant enough to have committed himself to Bedlam just to prove he can escape." And he grabs Reed by the front of his shirt, and he says, "That won't happen." Lockdown tells Edwina to prepare for trouble. Meanwhile, they start to separate Sue from the rest of the team, and Sue is still bitter because Reed helped them get caught in the first place. And when Johnny starts to flame on, he gets hotter and hotter, and Reed rams into a security guard who's holding a fire extinguisher, knocking the fire extinguisher out of his hands and onto Johnny and dousing Johnny's flames. And then the guards dogpile on Johnny and beat the shit out of him. Later, the four of them are locked up in separate cells. I'm still not sure why Reed is working to keep them in prison, but Dr. Edwina is looking in on them, and she's thinking to herself that she has nothing to worry about. I'm guessing she'll be feeling differently later. And later, in downtown Shadow City, at a luxurious mansion, home to one of the richest young women in the world, Nefer Neith. For some reason, she looks like Cleopatra. And she's having a big party, but she's bored. And she heads down to a bank of monitors, being watched over by her executive assistant, Jomo. And she says, "Jomo, I'm so bored." Which, it kind of sounds like a polite way to say, "Jomo, I'm so horny." But actually, she's hoping for some other kind of action. She wants to go fight some crime because secretly Nefer Neith is Rosetta Stone and Jomo Kimmanye is Lockdown. Go figure that in Claremont's world, the woman is really the woman one in charge, even though she's a protege. Nothing wrong with that, but Claremont is laying it on thick. I'm surprised he didn't replace Ben, Johnny, and Reed with women. It could be like Sue, She-Hulk, Crystal, and the She-Thing. That actually sounds like a pretty good book. I'd buy that. So back at the prison, Sue is asleep, but Reed is sitting Indian style on his bed. Can I say that? Or is it Native American style? Well, anyway, he's lost in thought about a situation and what he should do now. He takes in a huge breath of air, so big his whole body stretches out to a laughable proportions. He folds up this piece of paper and he blows on it, creating a noise that emits a special frequency which is agonizing to the ears of all the human prison guards nearby, incapacitating them. Holy crap! MacGyver, eat your heart out! Reed knocked out all these guards with a piece of paper! Is that cool or what? Or dumb? Oh, yeah, kind of dumb. So the dogs howl at the noise. Grim Ben gets a headache. And then, as Reed worries about being trapped in the prison, thinks to himself, much like what happened in the Himalayas after I got out of the army. And right then and there, we start a flashback where he is literally dressed up from head to toe like Indiana Jones and having adventures with Alyssa Moy, and he's got a machine gun in one hand and a child monk in another, and they're running from a group of Chinese soldiers who are shooting back at them? Holy shit, that sounds like a much better story than this one. Who cares about Shadow City? I want to see why Reed Richards is saving a child monk from a group of Chinese soldiers. So anyway, he thinks to himself that he hasn't heard from Prince Baiyun in a long time, which means that at some point in the next few issues, we'll probably hear from Prince Baiyun. And that is the end of the flashback. Just one panel. One crazy panel. It's completely absurd. And then back to the main story. Back in the prison, Reed, he's still wearing a green prison outfit, and he's still blowing on that paper, creating that awful noise, and the window in his cell cracks open. The window in his cell? Even though the way LaRocca draws it, it looks more like the wall is cracking. Seems to be a huge discrepancy between Claremont's window and LaRocca's wall. But Reed busts through the wall/window, and he's free. And suddenly, he's wearing a red and yellow Tetret outfit. Did the green outfit shatter, leaving the red outfit underneath? How did he magically change clothes? No explanation is given. Reed finds Ben and Johnny and says they should go find Sue. But first, Johnny wants to give the guard some serious payback for that beating earlier. But as the leader of the team, Reed overrides Johnny and says no. Back at the women's wing of the prison, the ladies are free too, and the Twisted Sisters are looking to give a little payback to Mr. Reed for helping the police put them in prison in the first place. I'd like a little payback too, from Chris Claremont for writing this horrible issue. But I'm the forgiving sort. Back at a fancy party, Lockdown and Rosetta get the call on Lockdown's beeper. Lockdown's beeper. The guy has a super fantastic futuristic car and a beeper. Go figure. Cell phones don't exist yet in this alternate 1999, I suppose. So they head down to the lock cave. They change into their superhero outfits and get into the lock car. That doesn't sound right. I don't think they call him the lock cave in the lock car, but it's a very Batman-esque character. So the Twisted Sisters find Stormy Sue passed out in her cell, and they use their powers together to turn Sue into one of their own. And she gets a crazy new costume, and they give her the name Torque. Wow, this is an exciting development. And it appears they think that Stormy Sue will help them fight Mr. Reed. But Sue is still able to control her own mind, and she turns on the sisters, knocking them out with a force field. Sue seems to realize that she doesn't quite belong in this reality. Reed tells Sue that he has a plan for getting them out of there, and they kiss. Soon, the Tetrad are reunited, just in time to face a group of nasty prisoners. Ben grabs one, and Reed tells all the criminals that they need to get ready for Lockdown. Meanwhile, Lockdown has arrived at the prison, and he starts smashing prisoners upside their heads. And then he finds the Tetrad and uses a bubble of anti-flame coagulant to neutralize Johnny and a neuron disruptor to take down Grim Ben. And Sue doesn't seem to be around. And Lockdown asks Reed where she is, and he says to leave her out of it. They take a moment to have a rather long conversation, and Reed wonders why Lockdown didn't use the neuron disruptor on him. Lockdown says he didn't think it would work on Reed. But he'll come up with something. Since Sue isn't around, Lockdown thinks that Reed has a plan, and Sue is an important part of it. Reed asks Lockdown, "What's your game? Are you just one of the pawns, or are you the player?" Meanwhile, Sue is off by herself, trying to concentrate on her true body. She tells herself that Stormy Sue is a lie, and so was Mannequin, the creature that turned the real Sue into an alien freak back on the moon. She concentrates more and more until she finally breaks out of her life pod as the real Sue Richards, back to herself, no longer an alien freak. The details of how she cured herself are very, very confusing, but yeah, she's back to normal. And back with Mr. Reed, Johnny Matchstick, and Grim Ben, They're surrounded by lockdown and a bunch of prison guards. And then the Twisted Sisters arrive. And then suddenly, the three men vanish. And they appear back in, I don't know. They don't wake up in their pods, but instead, they're in this large, cavernous room that seems to go on and on forever. Reed explains it's a warehouse for what must be the entire planetary population. So all the people of Shadow City and their world are stuck in suspended animation, and they're living in this virtual reality world. So let me see here. The movie The Matrix came out on March 31st, 1999. This issue would have gone on sale right around the same time. So it's pretty much a coincidence that this issue has some kind of weird Matrix-y ending. They wonder what they should do about all these people, and Reed says that maybe they don't have the right to interfere. But Reed has saved the coordinates, and they might return again someday. And when the robot guards show up, the FF figure they better get the hell out of there instead of being put back in those damn pods again. So they teleport away. And just when you think that's all there is, the issue ends with Lockdown watching the FF on a monitor and thinking that he doesn't need the FF screwing up with his world, so he's going to go after them, even though he's only a virtual reality character, right? He says, "There's no escape from Lockdown." But guess what, Lockdown, you asshole? The FF have escaped, and we will not be seeing you ever again. That's right. That's the end of that two-issue virtual reality story with Shadow City, and I did not think it was very good. In my opinion, the king of all FF virtual reality stories is issue 236, Terror in a Tiny Town, that also starts off with the FF in a virtual reality world. But in that story, Byrne slowly unravels the mystery. The story is well-paced, the motives of the bad guy, Dr. Doom, are somewhat logical, and it's just a fun, entertaining story. In the Shadow City story, Shadow City isn't a particularly interesting or compelling location. The reason as to why all these people are kept in this virtual reality world are not explained. Lockdown is a fairly generic character, and his only interesting moment comes at the end when he says he's going to chase after the FF. And I was wondering if he was going to do that, but when I googled it, I see that he doesn't appear in the pages of the FF ever again. The only other time he appears is in some kind of Contest of Champions Volume 2 miniseries, which I've never heard of. So I'm somewhat confused by the inclusion of the Twisted Sister characters. What was their purpose in the story? Other than the fact that Chris Claremont seems to be hell-bent on creating as many female characters as humanly possible, like, was there some kind of Guinness Book of World Records for the creation of female characters in a comic book that he's trying to break? And finally, the curing of Sue and her alien virus just comes out of nowhere. I'm left wondering why she was even given that virus in the first place. She apparently just wished the virus away. So that's it for that issue. Before I go, I have to mention that today, August 7th, 2015, is the opening day for what may very well be the greatest movie of all time. Or at least since the invention of color movies. Or hell, maybe since the invention of the talkie. Of course, I'm talking about Fant4Stick, the new Fantastic Four movie. The fourth Fantastic Four movie. Maybe I'll call it Fantastic Four 4. I just have the feeling that this one is going to be really great. They've had four tries. You would think with four tries, they would finally get it right. On the website Rotten Tomatoes, it currently has a 9% rating. That's pretty good, isn't it? I'm not a mathematical type guy, but isn't 10% the highest you can go? So 9% must mean it's an almost perfect movie. The reviews are in, and Fan4Stick sounds like this summer's must-see movie. Entertainment Weekly says, "This reboot has a very low hurdle to overcome to become the best FF movie so far. The most fantastical aspect of the movie is that it may not achieve that goal." USA Today writes, "An unfortunate movie that does an embarrassing disservice to the decades-old property and is a frightful waste of all the talent involved." Rolling Stone proclaims, "The latest reboot of the Fantastic Four, the cinematic equivalent of malware, is worse than worthless. It not only scrapes the bottom of the barrel, it knocks out the floor and sucks audiences into a black hole of soul-crushing, coma-inducing dullness." The New York Times says that Miss Mara disappears. Her character also has the ability to make other things vanish. I would say that she should have exercised it on this movie, but in a week or two, that should take care of itself. The New York Post notes that much of Josh Trank's abysmal Fantastic Four is set in a barren place called Planet Zero, and you may feel stranded there yourself for all 100 minutes of this plodding, joyless, and stillborn Marvel movie. The Village Voice says, counting Roger Corman's unreleased stab, this is the fourth Fantastic Four movie. It's also the fourth whose producers seem embarrassed at the thought of making a Fantastic Four movie. The Miami Herald adds that the Fantastic Four is a synthetic bum-out, an assembly-line product, a movie of a group of people made just because they could. And the Dallas Morning News writes, it's as if it looked at possible templates for excitement and willfully decided to go for something more disjointed and boring. The critic for the website Grantland writes, the entire experience is shameful. For us, for the filmmakers, for whoever at the studio had the job of creating the ads, in which the cast appears to be starring in hostage posters. And finally, Siskel and Ebert came back to say, thank God we're dead, so we don't have to see this miserable piece of shit. So there you go. Make your plans to see Fan4stic right away. Don't miss it, because you never know how long it's going to be playing. Well, if you want to, you can go see a movie about a talking sheep. But really, why would you do that? Speaking of the new FF movie, on Sunday, for the first time ever, I was a guest on another podcast, the Third Degree Burn podcast. That's Burn as in John Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, with Tim Elliott and Brian Hughes and several other people to discuss the new Fan4stic movie, which was not easy for me to do considering I haven't seen the movie, and they didn't have any reviews yet for me to read or know anything about, so there you go. If you want to hear me talk about something I know nothing about, check out the podcast. You can find it on iTunes under the Third Degree Burn Presents WTFF. You can download other episodes of iTunes of this podcast, or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. Phones still ring, singers sing, speakers are speaking in code.